So.
You guys have like a theme song that you start with?
No.
About that, we used one.
Yeah.
I thought we used Murdario Stomp for an episode.
Yeah, I tie it in post edit. We're already recording anyway. But
let's go.
So anyway, Lear, thanks for jumping on the show, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Already, like, we talked before this a little bit, and we got some stuff to get into for sure now that you filled us in on some details. But just for listeners, go ahead and, like, introduce yourself, your band, what you do in the band, that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I'm Lear. I am the singer-guitarist of Some Days Are Darker, which essentially is like a, I guess I call it a goth rock project at this point, because it's the easiest way to give someone a range of what it is. Slightly post-punkish, probably not as dark wave as some of the stuff that's a little more electronic, because we present more like a band. So I kind of say it's like somewhere between him and The Cure or somewhere in there. Gosh, usually that
brought it up away.
Yep.
We were wondering if you were gonna bring up him or not, because like,
oh hell yeah,
I was like, man, it sounds like a lot like it. Like, it's hard to not, you can't deny it no matter what way you cut it.
I wouldn't deny it.
The electronic album, like, of the remixes that you guys have, sound nothing like it. So I thought that was really cool, because like, when I first heard the first single, because Ramona brought the band up to us.
Yeah.
And I think she like told you about us as well. And then when I checked out the first single, I was like, oh, this sounds a lot like him. Told Jeremy about it. Then we got busy and got sidetracked or whatever and went back to it. Yeah. But then when I went to the electronic album, I was like, damn, this is nothing like it. Like, this is more along the lines of Sisters of Mercy and that sort of thing with the electronic instrumentation.
Yeah, for us, like, Depeche Mode also was a huge influence when we did the remixes of, like, where we wanted it to land. It's interesting because, like, this whole Some Days Are Darker just started as like a singer guitarist thing. Like, I was just going to do it solo at first because I didn't have a band and I didn't know what I was going to do with it really. But then eventually I got bandmates involved. So it became more of a band. Now it's a 3-piece band. So it's guitar, vocals, bass, drums, and we run a little bit of backing. But it, you know, that is like how it presents now. So it kind of evolved from being a lot mellower singer songwriter almost. And so by the time we did the first LP, it sounds more like a full band, but there's still a few acoustic songs in there, you know, no drumming and shit like that. And then when we did the, what we found was once we started playing shows, there's so much dark wave. And especially in Phoenix, LA, like Vegas, some of the places we played here, like San Diego on the West Coast, a lot of times when you book a band, like if it's post-punk or dark wave or somewhere in that realm, you're kind of always drawing the same people out. They're the people that like him and The Cure and Sisters and Depeche Mode and Joy Division. And it's all those same people. But a lot of the times we were playing with bands that were like two people. It would be like an electronics person and a singer.
Right. Or they don't have that full band.
Yeah, yeah. Or like backing tracks and a singer. Or one guitarist and a keyboardist or whatever. So it was like much more dark wave. You're getting a lot more like dark wave duos. And so when we did the remixes, we were like, well, what if we just take some of the songs we already have and just, like, we do all our own production up to this point. So we're like, what if we just remix our own stuff a little bit? And the goal was also to get some other friends and other bands involved in the remixes, because that always just kind of helps. We've actually been trying to get remixes of other bands that we could do as Inferno Choir, but Inferno Choir is basically the name of the label that I started for Some Days Are Darker, just to put out all my stuff and my back catalog in that. So when we did the remix project, we did two Inferno Choir remixes, which were just me and Robbie from Some Days Are Darker, just going like, how Depeche Mode can we push this, you know? And that's what we did with Nocturne. And then and Sisters is like probably my favorite band of all time, but maybe only second to Depeche Mode. So it's like, I'm a singer guitarist, but I'm influenced by a lot of electronic music.
Yeah.
And then we did the Lost Days.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh yeah.
I wanted to ask this since you brought up Sisters, because I'll forget.
Yes. Let's park on that.
If you had to pick between Sisters of Mercy and The Mission, which would you choose?
Well, I would easily choose Sisters. Yeah.
Okay.
I go to Sisters
very easily. I have like a weird loyalty complex to singers, or especially like it's probably a flaw or something I need to, you know, work through in therapy, but like most bands that are like kind of like run by the singer, for lack of a better term, at that break up and then the band goes and does something else, I always just prefer, like, I prefer Peter Murphy to Love and Rockets.
Right.
But I'd rather them be Bauhaus.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But if I have to pick now, there's two bands and you hear that a lot where it's like the singer's an egomaniac and we can't work with them anymore. And so the band goes and does something else and ends up being cool.
Art though is good. Isn't that the case, you know?
I know. And like
sometimes there's a reason for the ego. So,
and in the sister argument in the mission, which is obviously what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Wayne Hussey in his own right has his own ego, and it, you know, the mission's so fucking good, dude.
And the mission's like, great, you know, to take anything away from it.
I agree with you. Like, I'm kind of the same way. If a band goes and switches singers or a crucial member, like, I often prefer the original. And in that case, I still would. But in that specific case, like, I mean, to me, they're almost neck and neck. Like, they're two great bands. Yeah.
Two great bands.
Similarities.
I hate to have to choose, but if I have to, I will.
right. Yeah. Gun to the head, it's Sisters.
I had to ask because we were talking about that yesterday, and I was like, any Sisters of Mercy's fan, I always ask that just out of curiosity because I do know some people that prefer the mission to Sisters.
Yeah, I mean.
You know anybody that prefers New Order to Joy Division?
Not off the top of my head, but if you gave me a minute, I only could because find we
brought
someone.
Up this, no, brought up the same thing, and that would be, you know, it's like the singer left, but they changed the name, different band, singer left, and I love both bands, but I'd pick Joy Division without thinking twice, you know.
Same, and I recently had that conversation with a friend of mine, and I said, you know, I kind of realized as we were talking through it, like maybe Joy Division just got too fucking dark. And by the time Ian Curtis took his own life, you know, that might be part of the reason that New Order is a little more optimistic at times. Like, sure, they have, you know, Blue Monday and they have some sadness, some darkness to it. But they definitely did a shift when they lost Curtis. And I think maybe it just makes me wonder if they just, you know, things got a little too dark for them for a while.
I think the music along with the suicide happening, probably they wanted to just, they're like, we're getting away from this.
I really want to catch.
Because the second LP is like very dark. You see, I think it's even like harder to get through than the first one.
For Joy Division?
Yeah, definitely. With Joy Atmosphere. Division,
Yeah.
Yeah, Ceremony. Super record. But,
Did you guys watch the George Michael documentary recently? The Netflix one, I think it was last year.
No, I added it to my list because somebody, I can't think of who off the top of my head, somebody was telling me about it and they're like, it's actually really fucking cool. Like, I'm like, yeah, I would watch it, but I just never got around to it.
They show some interview footage of him, like when he used to sit on those goofy English like pop shows with like Morrissey and George Michael sitting on the couch talking about current events and stuff. He brought up the second Joy Division record. Is that what it's called? What's the white record called?
Closer.
Closer, yeah.
Closer.
Is it closer or closer?
Closer. Okay. C-L-O-S-E-R.
They're spelled the same way, though.
Which is also their closer.
Closer. Close.
And he had mentioned that he was on this pop show just talking about like that he thought it was a brilliant record and he liked it better than their first record. And I thought that was interesting because like George Michael also got, for a pop star, got pretty dark, had some pretty dark moments musically. But to go back to Sisters, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
don't mind.
Picture not this. My favorite Sisters record is the first one. And it's because I love the instrumentation so much. Like I love the 12-string guitar and like kind of jangly elements. I don't know. There's just something very bleak about that one. And so I have to give credit to the whole band and Hussey and everybody for being on that record, right? But imagine you're Eldridge and your band's like, fuck you, you're too hard to work with. We're out of here and we're going to go start something else. And then you're like, okay, fine. I'm gonna write another record by myself, and you fucking write Floodland.
Yeah, that's my favorite
Dude,
one.
That's like, that's two middle fingers to everyone that said.
I'm gonna fill the gap here, and Vision Thing is my favorite Sisters record.
Dude, Vision Thing's fucking awesome.
I know they're so all so good.
So yeah, then he has the Floodland era.
Do a bad one, but yeah, that is the ultimate. Like, fuck you guys.
Then he's working with Patricia Morrison. He's got some other bandmates coming in and out. Then Patricia's like, oh, he's hard to work with. He never pays me. I'm sure he was hard to work with, and I doubt he paid her. Then he fucking writes a Vision Thing, dude.
Yeah.
It's like just three just all-time great records in a row. Boom, boom, boom. And the fact that he never put anything else out, I'm like, I don't know, man. It's probably for the best. It's like, it's probably for the best that Caius never put another record out, right? It's just the perfect legacy.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't have the time to put out that dreaded fourth or fifth album that's going to be like your
You didn't have time to put out like Danzig 5 or 6.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Danzig
Stop
6
and How the God Kills.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I think about Sisters. It's like, man, he was like unstoppable. It didn't matter who he was working with.
So obviously that was a big influence on you then, especially being sort of Andrew moving on to being a one-man band essentially later on in his career. And actually it kind of started out that way a little bit too, where because we both read Paint My Name in Black and Gold, the book, which was actually, I don't remember the name of the guy that wrote it, but you need an editor, dude. I'm not.
Is it rough?
It was. It's
just there's a better one out there.
Yeah, Jeremy has a better one. What's the name of it? I can't remember.
I'll have to...
But it was rough, like in the sense of there's like 20 guys named John in the book, and also he doesn't like Andrew Eldridge goes from being called Andy to Taylor to Eldridge to Andrew to and like it just bounces around so much, and I'm like, dude, just pick a name and run with it. And it just felt like it repeated the same story over and over again. And there was literally a paragraph this big on Vision Thing, and that was it.
Oh, weird.
The book you want to read is Waiting for Another War.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I knew the name.
See, in a weird way, it's like, I don't know if I want to read all that. I don't know how much I want to know about how fucked up
That. I got you.
You know what I mean?
Well, we're who we are, and we're nerds, so we want to know everything.
Like, sometimes I don't want to peel back the curtain in some ways, but I will admit this. I was very bored like a year or two ago. I don't remember the context, but for some reason, I spent like a week reading every single link at the bottom of Sisters of Mercy's Wikipedia, because all the citations were like these super old pubs that are like archived and like JPEGs of news articles from the UK and shit like that. And I learned a lot of really fucking weird stuff about what was going on in that era, like reading a lot of old Eldridge interviews from like first and second record era. And it was super interesting. So
like shit that he would talk about, like the environment around him, things of that nature, or like just the times and shit.
Yeah. The times, the band, like, what drugs he's taking at the time, and you know, the interviewers talking about how strung out he looks and just like all kinds of different
lots and
weird
lots
shit
and lots
like,
of speed
yeah preparing
lots of
preparing
speed.
For war definitely tells
speed
you
of drum machines
it. But that's fucking cool. That's a hell of a rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. And like similarly, because we brought up him earlier, that was a band for me. Like, I got into them on Razorblade Romance, like in a huge way. And that's still definitely my favorite him record.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. I think it's perfect. But I think it's perfect musically for them, for what they do. It's a perfect album. And I think just the look, like, I know people who just saw that album cover in a store and bought it just because the fucking vibe was just like nothing else at the time. And, I just think they nailed that whole aesthetic, the logo, everything they were doing was super cool. The lyrics were great. And I didn't know.
I wonder if they thought that logo was going to become as big as it did. Dude. Because for a while, like, it was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, it's so, the best logos are like simple but brilliant, right? And I always feel like the HIM logo is the logo I wish I would have fucking drew, because I feel like that thing just took off like wildfire. But it's so perfect for that band, the love metal thing. And
it's if you
the
can get
pentagram and the heart
to tattoo it, you're fucking golden, dude.
Oh, hell yeah.
You're making a killing.
Plus, you'd be a pretty rich dude by now for how many times that thing's been licensed and sold.
You would think.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't BAM own it? Like, or does Vil Valo own it? I can't remember which one of them, but...
I am unsure.
I thought BAM owned something to do with the band, a share, a stake, or maybe he was just like a super fucking mega fan. I don't remember, but I know he was... Yeah. He had a hand in it growing as popular as it did.
For sure. I couldn't speak to the legality of it, but...
Yeah, I don't know for sure either.
Yeah, and I think where I was going with that too is just that I didn't realize at first that him was a singer-songwriter band. Like, I mean, I think that dude, Valo, just... These are all like his riffs, his lyrics, mostly his songs, but they present as a band. I always thought of them as a band, like five guys going in the jam room and being like, hey, check out this riff. But I really think it's most likely, especially with what he's doing now, a band where he's like, okay, guys, here are the songs.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, of course, the guy's putting his leads on or adding his own keyboard parts or whatever, but like, there's more bands than I realize as I get older, the more I realize how many bands are kind of like run by one primary songwriter. Yeah. I think it's a lot more rare to have like a band where there's equal input from every musician, which if you have that, it's awesome. I mean, I think I've definitely had a range of that in the bands I've worked on, but like, yeah, I think there's more of that than you realize. And that all goes back to like, usually when a band breaks up, I kind of side most of the time, I think, with the singer-songwriter or the primary songwriter. Even if like the primary songwriter is the guitarist that gets kicked out of the band's going to sound different after that. So it's like...
For sure.
Yeah. It's like, I'm a big Nails fan and I really love the Todd Jones era Terror stuff. And it's not that different, but like, I don't love... all the other Terror records as much. They're good. Terror's pretty consistent. But the early Todd Jones Terror to me is the best. And it's just like, I don't know for sure that those are all his songs, but I'm pretty sure they're all his songs.
Like the Lowest of the Low and then with the Underdogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, those sound totally different.
The 4-song demo.
Oh, yeah, it's so sick.
Gold. Yeah.
So before we spend the rest of this episode talking about other bands, because we'll do that.
I thought that's what we're supposed to be doing.
I'm going to divert here back to Some Days Are Darker.
Sure.
So you guys started as just a solo project then, and today how many people are in the band?
Three today, yeah.
Three today, okay.
Yeah, we play as a three-piece now. Yeah, and... basically what happened was Chris Martin, who is the bassist in Some Days Are Darker, is also an engineer and he does a lot of recording and stuff from home and production. So when I first started working on this, I started working with him because he also worked on my previous band, Evolution of the Kill. And he also worked on the Kill Everyone record, actually.
Right on.
With us in various capacities because there are two recordings of that. But so when I started Some Days Are Darker, basically I came to him and was like, hey, I have these songs. Can you help me mix? Can you help me get something out? And we actually used a session drummer. I played guitar and did vocals, and then Chris did bass and then engineered it and mixed it. And so the first stuff came out was kind of like we had guys from different states playing on it. And it was kind of a singer-songwriter project. I figured I was going to go play it solo. And then I got a drummer in Phoenix working with me, Brian Upton, who was the drummer in a band I played in here called The Iris. And they were like a goth rock band from Phoenix that did a couple records. And I started working with Brian. So I thought, okay, this is cool. Like I have a drummer now. This can be more of a thing. We were going to kind of do it like a two-piece. And so we went in to record the record. We did the LP. But when I did the LP, I wanted to go to a proper studio in Phoenix. So I started looking around for studios. And it turns out there was a studio in downtown Phoenix, like around the corner from my apartment that I didn't know about. So I hit those guys up and this guy, Robbie Williamson, replies to my email and says, hey, yeah, if you want to track your drums, come on over. And I figured he was just going to track drums and I would give everything to Chris and Chris would take over. So I went down to the studio and, Robbie does this thing that he calls like a vibe check, which is like he has you just come in for an hour and you just sit and hang out and talk about your project and what you want to do. So he could see if
That's
it's a
cool.
good fit and like if he understands what you want to do and if, what it's going to be like to work together and things. So
I think a
I
lot
go
of
in there.
bad albums could have been saved by doing
Yeah, no shit. That's like a fucking great
that.
idea. Just to see if you guys are gonna kind of like flow together or not, you know?
And if he thinks he could be successful on it based on what you're asking for, and because as creatives coming together to work on things is super difficult, so
Yeah, not everybody has the same end goal or vision, so there might be some clash there.
and a lot of artists are like really holding the bag tight, they don't want to let anybody in. And
Right.
so anyway, I sat down there with him, and the first thing I noticed was he was wearing a black parade shirt. And I was like, oh, this bodes well, because I love MCR. And I was just like, okay, cool. He's an MCR fan. He probably is like into some good music, whatever. And so we started talking about bands, and I said, did you listen to any of the material? And he goes, yeah, I listened to a few songs last night, and kind of reminds me of like Interpol. And then he rattled off a couple other bands, but it was the first time that anyone had ever like compared me to one of my actual influences musically. And it was just like, it was the simplest thing, but just in that moment, I knew he completely understood what I was trying to do musically. And I was like, really, what song? And we started talking about Take Me Anywhere and Restless Tides, I think was one of them that he mentioned that sounded kind of like Leif Erikson. So anyway, we ended up working with Robbie to do the record, and then the more I got to know Robbie, the more involved he became, and we ended up having him mix the whole record. And then by the end of the recording session, my drummer Brian basically admitted that he didn't have the time and he didn't want to keep doing it. And he also works sound. He does front of house at a venue here, so all his work nights are the exact nights that you want to be playing shows.
Right.
So
That
that's how Robbie
sucks.
became our drummer. Yeah, it was like Brian left, and then now Robbie had worked on everything, plus he's a drummer, and it was like, great, can you fucking play drums for us?
It is cool how things work out that way, though, isn't it? You know, it's kind of like meant to be, if you will.
I mean, if he were going to
It
have a
feels a lot like
fill-in,
that.
I feel like he was probably the best fit since he was already somewhat associated with the band. It's not like you were pulling in some dude auditioning off the street.
Yeah, and man, drummers are so hard to find for me. Like, I spent years trying to find drummers, and I was kind of like pulling Brian in against his will. He enjoyed doing it with me because we're good friends. We have similar music tastes, but I always knew that like he wasn't trying to do a band full time, so I knew it was limited. So yeah, it all kind of just fell into place that way with Robbie and Chris. And so now I basically have two engineers in my band, and that's what we're working with now is a three piece.
So you guys put out a single this year. Do you have plans to put out an EP or a full record this year by chance, or is that coming down the road next year probably?
Yeah, no, that's a lot of cool shit has happened this summer. And one of the things that happened is we're going to be recording with Dave Catching at Rancho de la Luna. You guys know that studio out in Joshua Tree. This
Oh,
is like where,
yeah. I know what you're talking about
like
now.
where the Desert Sessions were done and all the Queens of the Stone Age
Yeah,
stuff.
yeah.
The new Iggy Pop record was done out there. Arctic Monkeys, PJ Harvey. They've done a lot of cool shit. Actually, if well, there's two. There's an Anthony Bourdain episode where he goes to Rancho de la Luna and hangs out with like Josh, Homme, and Dave and all those guys.
That's
Super old.
cool.
It's like 720p, but it's on YouTube. You can find it. And if you ever saw that kind of cringe Foo Fighters show they did, where they like wrote a song every episode, and they're
I
like,
watched that where they toured to every studio. Yeah, they went there. Yeah.
they
Yeah, I've
went to
never
Rancho
seen
on
that.
one of them. So,
Yeah, Sonic Highways, I think it's called.
yeah, Sonic Highways,
Like they went to
great
Steve Al
show.
I
I
like the
usually
Steve
like to,
Albini episode. It was like real
yeah.
fucking cool.
I love all the episodes. I just turn it off when they do the song at the end.
Exactly.
It's not for me.
Nah, not my thing either, man.
So yeah, we're going out there to record with Dave, I think this October. And so we have released, we put out a single called Downpour in last fall, October, and then we put out Obsession on Valentine's Day, and we just put out Dead Romance in June, I think June 16th, 14th, something like that.
Yeah, I'd
So,
have to look at my Apple Music, but I know it was recent,
yeah.
semi-recently.
Yeah. So we put out three singles, and I always up to now thought those three singles would be on the next LP. But we produced that ourselves our own way at Robbie's studio, Orange Blossom in Phoenix. And so those songs that we have done, we have a new single that was going to be the next one called Oblivion. And we also tracked a cover of Protect Me From What I Want by Placebo,
Okay. Shit, I haven't
which,
heard that band in forever.
And we've been playing that live now, which it's been cool. We've worked it out, and so we have the three singles out, and we're sitting on two more. But I just realized within the past week or so that the production is probably not going to match now that we're going out to Rancho to do another batch of songs. So we'll be putting all those songs I just mentioned out as like a five song EP
Okay.
this fall,
And then just recording the whole
and then.
other record at that studio.
Yeah, then we're going to do a full length at Rancho in the end of October. So that'll likely be out, with the whole cycle and everything, probably by spring or maybe a bit later, spring or summer
Okay.
of 25.
Definitely
Yeah.
looking forward to that EP, man. I like the new song, the Dead Romance song.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. Appreciate that.
What
Yeah,
was
we've
your
got that.
inspiration on the lyrics with that?
There's it kind of all goes back to my divorce, actually, that one. Yeah, my first marriage.
Brutal.
He's a husband
Yeah.
too.
Husband.
That's our new
Yeah.
term on the show.
Oh, fuck. Are you guys
Jeremy
also?
introduced it.
It's
No, I've
horrible.
never been
We need to
married.
stop. We need to stop
Oh,
saying
yeah.
it. No, me neither. Me neither.
Divorcees. Yeah, it was interesting getting divorced. At first, it was like I had trouble with the concept of being divorced and feeling like you kind of broke some oath, or that you couldn't keep a promise to somebody. Marriage is kind of like the ultimate lifelong
For sure.
promise, and I had a lot of I struggled with that at first, and then I just kind of realized that we're both just better off, and that it's just a pretty normal part of life that people go through. And I think like
Yeah.
identifying as divorced is weird, because it's like if I see a checklist that says, are you single, married, or divorced, I'm like, why the fuck would I check divorced?
Yeah, you're
I'm just
single.
put single. Like,
Yeah. I've never understood that
what's
either.
that
Like,
about?
is there something that they like, oh, he's divorced, red flag, like
Right.
that sort
Like,
of
what does it
thing?
matter?
Because it should be if you're single
It's a good
or sometimes you
question.
see separated or whatever. Like,
Bring that up to our next city council
I think it
meeting.
only applies to taxes, really.
It
It shouldn't apply for anything else. Like,
shouldn't
that never
matter in
made sense.
taxes either.
Well, it shouldn't, but I'm saying if you had to joint file or whatever, like, we're not here to
Yeah.
talk taxes. I'm not a
Sorry,
fucking
sorry.
accountant.
We're taking a weird segue. I feel like that's my fault.
Yeah.
But
That
yeah,
happens. No, but
so
I just meant like the that song, it definitely sounds like a hymn song or a hymn-esque style song with that like dark, well, it's Dead Romance, a dark sound and some, you sound like painful misery, but like at the same time super catchy.
yeah, thanks, dude. It's like, yeah, musically, it's kind of rolling a few things together. I actually had those guitar parts for a long time, like well before I had written most of that song, well before I knew I was going to do this band, Some Days Are Darker. It was just something I had kind of been sitting on. And then when we started working through new singles, it kind of came out. And then once Robbie got attached to it, originally it was going to be a lot more down tempo. It was just like a singer-songwriter type thing. And then when Robbie got a hold of it, he's like, hey man, I think this thing needs to be like double time what you're playing it. And I'm like, no shit. Okay, let's hear it. And so he put that like driving beat behind it. And then that kind of caused the guitar parts to evolve into some of the more like a little bit like, New Order or Joy Division style, like single note stuff,
Yeah.
rather just like acoustic strumming.
Right. So
And
that
that's
thing
kind of what
really
Robbie does.
evolved
Like
then. That's cool.
he just kind of like, as a producer, he just kind of injects that life or that like fresh perspective into my stuff. So I've really enjoyed working with him in that way. And then intentionally went in and like put more synths on it than we have in the past. Like when I had a more stripped down band or thought it was going to be solo, it was sort of like I was kind of averse to using any programming or synths or things. But now that we're a band and we can perform and we have, a little bit of backing to fill it in, we've been kind of going back. I have a SH-101 and some old Roland analog synths that I bought because they were specifically the ones that The Cure used on like Faith and some of those records. So we've been kind of intentionally adding a little bit more of that sound in. So kind of trying to find that like balance between post-punk and dark wave.
So you're like kind of like a gear nerd too.
Yeah, big time.
Awesome.
I feel
Big
like
time.
in if you're doing gothic music that's electronic in any way, you have to be a gear nerd.
No, yeah, I know. It's just like when you're like, I got some old Roland analogs, the ones they actually used on Faith.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
Some of that
okay.
shit's hard to find
Yeah, I
too.
know. I got
Should
a
we go down
cheat.
that path? I went on eBay and was like looking for well, actually it was Reverb, I think, ultimately. But yeah, I was finding like a store in Japan that refurbs and sells like early 80s analog synths, shipped it, it's mint,
That's
and the price was
crazy.
not as bad as you would think. Even the SH-101 I got, I was very surprised at the price, so I had to grab it because they're usually like dramatically overpriced. So
Yeah,
that was a big
that's
one
one of
too for
those
all you
things
synth
where
guys out.
like the name alone drives a price tag.
Yeah, I just like playing with those things digitally. You know what I mean? Instead of like, I don't have any actual analog synths. Like you said, the stuff can get pricey, but
Fuck yeah.
yeah.
Then you
Yeah,
got
I like
guitar
the analog
heads.
workflow a lot. Like I don't enjoy digging through synths and patches and shit like that. Like it's not for
Right.
me. But I really do like an analog synth workflow. I like the idea that you can just grab it and like we'll sit there in the studio and just be passing it between me and Robbie. And we're just, what about this? Because any sound you make, you have to dial it in on the spot.
Right.
And when you plug it in, it's still that sound until you fuck with it again. So like we'll just kind of be passing it back and forth and trying out sounds and shit like that. And it really does like
So much
add
fun.
to the creative process. Yeah.
Well, I feel like having that, actually in front of you, it doesn't really box you in, but it gives you know the sound that it's going to put out. So you know like what you're looking for. Whereas if you have a computer and you're running some type of software that has, 18,000 synth plugins, it's almost overwhelming because you're like, well, I could go with this sound, this sound, this sound. So you're more like on one direct path with the actual instrument in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more boring to me than sitting in a DAW and like toggling through each patch.
Yeah, and
Like,
you're
what
just
is this? And
running
what
your
is this?
finger across the keyboard, seeing what noise it makes, type of thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's fucking so boring to me. So, yeah, being able to kind of like craft a dial in the sound that's in your head makes a lot more sense for my workflow anyway.
So for shows, I know you're playing Blackout Barbecue this upcoming weekend.
Yeah.
Aside from that, what do you guys have coming up? Because I think you said you're traveling out of country here soon, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we just did a little run of Detroit, Windsor, and Toronto a couple weeks ago. That was nice. Those are some good shows. And then, yeah, Ramona wanted to get us on Blackout Barbecue, but it was a little too late. So I'm gonna do an acoustic set
Oh,
this
that's
Friday.
right. Yeah,
Right
it's an
on.
all
Yeah,
acoustic thing. Yeah.
I'm gonna do an acoustic set Friday on the patio. And then right now, because I'm right in the middle of this move to New York and everything. There's just a lot of logistical bullshit going on in my life. So we're looking at October, November to do some more US stuff. And it's just going to depend on which week we're at Rancho and then what other stuff we can work around. So technically, nothing else until the only thing we have solid on the calendar right now is we'll be at the, Black Christmas.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be doing Black Christmas on the 30th, I think it is this year. And we'll be doing that as like a full band show.
Yeah, I haven't seen aside from like you just saying that, I've talked to Ramona about it. I know we're going to have her back on and talk to her with it.
Nice. We haven't made it to Christmas yet.
Yeah. Christmas is like usually hard for me to get down there because it's just such like a busy time.
Yeah, I was there last year and it was a great time. I just saw so many people I hadn't seen.
I was there last year too.
I was gonna say I thought you were there last year.
I was.
Yeah.
So it was good to see you. Did I get COVID?
It's good to see you.
No.
So many people I know got sick after that show. No. I got sick that week too. Yeah.
Probably just because of the influx of people being crowded together, or they're sharing drinks. I don't know.
Yeah, or both.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a great show. So that's the only thing permanent on the calendar right now, but we've got a bunch of stuff in the works, so just nothing I can announce yet.
Yeah. So before we started recording, we were talking about some of your previous bands, and they were more in like kind of the hardcore punk type of realm. How did you make the transition from that style to like the goth rock that you're doing now? Was it just simply out of your love of Sisters of Mercy, Depeche Mode, and that sort of thing? Or was there something that like drove you?
That's always been there. And like, as a songwriter, there's, you know, tons of songs that I write and never put out. And even when I was like in Face Down, for example, writing just like metalcore and mosh parts, there's always like other songs, like acoustic songs, or fucking I'm screwing around with something else in the background that's a totally different style. So I've kind of had like side projects and little offshoots and things that didn't go anywhere. But I think the main thing that happened was I had done like a few hardcore bands, because I did Counterfeit first, Face Down, then It's All Gone to Hell for a little bit, and then I was in it for a little bit, but a year or two of their stretch. And then
you just played guitar and It's All Gone to Hell, right?
Yeah. When Hasty stepped out, I was second guitar. And then I did Kill Everyone real briefly. So then after that, I started this other project called Evolution of the Kill that was more like melodic vocal over metalcore kind of thing. Like, I don't think they existed yet, but if I had to compare it to something now, it's like kind of similar to early Bring Me the Horizon type sound, where it's like a alternative vocal over metal or something.
Gotcha.
It's a very like 2000s era thing. Every band that did that for a minute.
Yeah. And I think it was like 06 to 08 that I worked on that record. And then anyway, just to wrap that up, I had done like 10 or 12 years at that point of just heavy music. And I was like really, really bored of playing to metal crowds, almost like frustrated by it, because it was like, the goal was always just to like fire up the metal crowd. It was like the more violent you could make everyone be, and the more everyone's hitting each other or jumping off the stage or whatever, then the more success you have. But I got just really burned out on like writing songs, thinking about how people were going to react to it live. And then you go and play live and you see like, oh, that song, everyone just stands there. This song, everyone goes crazy. So then as a writer, you start always trying to write something that's going to make everyone go crazy.
Yeah.
And I got really bored of that. And what I realized is that like at all our shows, dudes were all fired up hitting each other and shit, and girls were just kind of standing around. And I was like, for the next record, I want to make songs that everyone in this room can enjoy. I want to make songs that like, instead of just dudes punching each other, I would like to see girls dancing. I would like to see people just like moving and, you know, having a good time instead of just like fucking each other up. Cause I've been making people fuck each other up for a long time. So Evolution of the Kill had a severe evolution. Of the first record is heavy as fuck, and the second record is almost like alternative or something, almost like and the second LP, that was the first record to the EP, and the last LP we did was almost like post-punk revival influence, and there was some more electronics in there and some more programming and a little bit of Depeche Mode creeped in. And so once I quit that, then I did this band in Phoenix called The Iris, which is basically my friend Brandon Dooley's band. He was the primary songwriter in that, but I just jumped in and played second guitar with him. So I spent about a year playing all these goth rock shows and playing the Iris music with Brandon. And then it was just felt kind of natural progression after that, that when I started doing Some Days Are Darker, it was like, okay, I'm here now, you know? And like, as much as I would love to do another heavy band again, and I would love to do a band that I'm not the singer of, because I've been the singer of like the last three or four bands, being just playing guitar in a heavy band would be super fun. I'd love to do that again. But yeah, this just felt like, you know, coming through all of those transformations, this was just like kind of the natural path.
And for everybody out there listening, he has been to our hometown of Alpena and has played shows here in our little hometown. So that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, we learned that beforehand. So that was, you said that was quite a while ago then.
In like 99, 2000?
2000.
It would have been around that area, yeah, because I think I was in Face Down from 99 to 01 or 02, I think.
You guys would have played with Witness to an End would have been another band around that time, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I think
I saw you guys play with that band up here when I was like young, 15, 16. It would have been like my second or third show, actually.
In Grain, you said too, right?
Yeah, that was before my time. Oh, okay. That was a couple years before me.
Yeah.
Because that was like,
man, I wish I could remember the names of those guys.
96,
97,
98. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's even early for me.
And
yeah, because I was doing Counterfeit in like 97.
Yeah, that's another band, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, and this is funny. So Chris Rawson from Stick to Your Guns was also in Whilst Jericho, It's All Gone to Hell.
Yep.
Our first band together in high school was Counterfeit. And when I joined, it was like Chris's band. He was mainly the songwriter. And he said, my goal with this band is to open for Earth Mover at the Shelter.
Fucking awesome.
And so we were like, okay, that's our goal. Let's do it. So we played all these shitty shows and we just started like meeting other cool hardcore bands and like other kids around. And the Windsor scene was kind of like that wave of hardcore was developing, like the late 90s wave into the early turn of the century. And I think it was within the first year we opened for Earth Mover at the Shelter, and Ramona booked it, which comes full circle because
that's awesome.
Yes, and Ramona, your booking agent now.
Yeah, Ramona just became, you know, we just started working with her again as a booker for Some Days Are Darker. So that whole thing kind of came full circle. I mean, it's like 20 plus years of just bands and shows, and the hardcore scene is just still what's connecting everybody, even now in our 40s.
Yeah, no, isn't it crazy?
And Ramona's the one bringing everybody together for it.
Yeah, still. Oh,
yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
So I'm sure she'll listen to this, so shout out to Ramona for sure.
Yeah, love you, Ramona.
So what was it, if you remember, what was it like playing up here versus like the Detroit area? Because I was way too young to be at the show here, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, when we played Detroit, it always felt like, first of all, like Detroit is one of the greatest cities to play. I think Detroit is like, I always say about Detroit that whatever you're into in Detroit, you're really into. Like people in Detroit are no bullshit and they're very passionate about what they're into.
Yeah.
Whereas like there's a lot of other cities that you play and people are like, you know, too cool or they're too calm or they just want to stand there with their arms crossed or whatever. But it was never that way in Detroit, man. We'd always make friends with everybody. There was always just great energy at the shows. And I think Detroit also had, for us and our whole region, Windsor and everything else, the most legit like venues. Like playing the Shelter when I was 17 was like, wow, this is like a real venue. They have a sound guy. There's a fucking doorman. There's like a bar.
Security,
in Windsor, we used to play the fucking Gino Marcus. That was a hall that we booked for like $150. And it was just an empty room. We had to bring our own PA. It was like totally just cobbled together. But that was also like some of the charm of early hardcore.
Right.
And I remember Alpena being like Windsor. It was like very DIY. it was like the bands putting their own shows together and that kind of thing. Like, I don't think there was any bookers or like proper venues, right? It would have been in like
it was just in
a rental hall or something.
Yeah, like there's Wilson Township Hall, Sanborn Hall. I saw you guys play at. Yeah, shit that we would book, Presqu'île. And then like what would happen up here, it'd be like something would happen to where like maybe the place, somebody left some trash or some old person drove by and was like, there's a bunch of people out there, hooligans and tattoos and acting crazy loud music. And then they get shut down and to the point where it was like, you know, oh, I'm having a birthday party. Oh, you already tried that here. That's not going to work again. You know, like it's.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's like trying to book Bad Luck 13. They have to keep changing their name every show.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember it being like very DIY, very cool, like hyper local. I remember it being like a few really cool bands from up there that we became good friends with and we traded shows with. And yeah. And I remember Alpina Kids coming down to all the Detroit shows. And I was like, oh, good. You know, Alpina's here. It was like everyone was traveling from their little, you know, small towns to come to like good shows. And we felt the same way because we're from Windsor. It's just a bullshit little town. But we all kind of had Detroit to like connect us, I think, in that region.
Yeah. It amazes me how many people know about Alpina just in general. Because us being from here, like we just see it as this little like tiny ass speck on the map that really nobody knows. But I've been to a lot of shows where you meet people, talk to them, they ask you where you're from, and they're like, oh, I go there for this, that, or the other. Like, or I seen a show there like 20 years ago, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's wild though, because there's like virtually none of that here now. I mean, I guess kind of, but not like what I'd be into. Like, we just had LA Guns play here like a week ago or something, which I'm not into LA Guns, but cool that they came here.
Did you go?
No.
Yeah.
Nah, man, I missed that.
That's a weird one, man. Very weird one.
They played at, so there's like a festival here called the Brown Trout Festival every year. It's like a big fishing festival.
Okay.
It used to be a lot bigger, and now I feel like it's kind of just dwindled down into it just this pale imitation of what it was. But I'm just like amazed so that they got LA Guns to play there, because they at one point were a big band. And clearly that's not working out quite as well for them now.
Yeah, I wonder what they did get paid for that, just that I'm like, you know, morbid curiosity.
I heard like 30K or something like that.
Shit, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's why those legacy bands still get those gigs, because there's a place in Phoenix called Verado. It's like a master plan, like a small town out in Buckeye. And they do a annual festival every year, and they always book like a huge band. And it's a lot of times like late in the career band. Like, I think the first band they booked there was like B-52s, but they've done like... they
brought out Rock Lobster.
I'd totally go to that, dude.
Dude, yeah, at the small town festival kind of thing. And it gets packed, like they pack in the whole area where, like, I don't know what the capacity of that lawn would be, but it's jam packed every year with whatever band they have. They've had a lot of like 80s legacy bands. And anyway, a couple years ago, they had Vince Neil. And it was Vince Neil, like, you know, with his, no one from Motley Crue, it was just like, you know, some other LA dudes. Man.
Was it actually Vince Neil, or was it like Roseanne Barr dressed up in a wig or something? Because you can mistake the two.
It was something.
It's his doppelganger. Did you go? Man. You went to it?
So because for work, I do a lot of video work. I was able to get a press pass, and I was, you know, they let you shoot like one song or 10 minutes or whatever. So yeah, I went because I knew Vince Neil was going to like completely make a fool out of himself. And I just wanted to like be really close and like see what the fuck was going to happen. So I filmed, and it was a catastrophe. Like, I'm sure you've seen, I don't know how much shit I should talk on your show,
but
like,
some, shit, I don't care. Vince Neil doesn't, I doubt he listens to this. And if he does, fuck him. So,
all I would say is, dude, like,
yeah, and if he should be in my opinion, he should be in jail. I'm done.
I was going to kill the guy.
Yep.
This sh- it was the most embarrassing show I've seen by far. There was a point where he just left the stage. He played a few songs
Had to
and
take
he's,
a breather.
Had like a rock star. I got to hit my oxygen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
He
in
did.
the back, like
He did
face
like
masking.
three or four terrible songs, you know, which is like the worst vocals you've ever heard. And then ran away. And yeah, he looked like, you know, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, like cruising around out
Oh,
there.
man.
And then he goes backstage and fucking doesn't come back. So his band is all like, yeah, all right. So they just take over and start doing like covers. They're doing like Zeppelin tunes and AC/DC and shit. And his band ripped. They're fucking great. He had a great drummer. Both his guitar and bassist could sing well. They're, you know, as
Just
like
like
a,
fuck him, these guys kick
yeah.
ass.
And they got a huge crowd there that is just waiting, you know? They played, I think, three songs before Vince Neil came back. And I'm
Man.
99% sure that was not rehearsed. It was just like, fuck, we got to fill the air. And then
Yeah.
all of a sudden he comes running back out and is like, oh, okay, well. And they play a few more songs, dude. It was so fucking weird.
Yeah, the
But.
promoter's like, get your ass back up there. I'm not fucking paying you for three songs
And
that you did.
I know you said 30K. Like,
Yeah.
I think the pay for that was, as far as I know, was upwards of that, and
Yeah.
for one gig. And so it's like, I get why they go out and do it, but at the same time, it's like, man, Motley Crue has such a good legacy, and like, the more you do that, the worse you just
Yeah.
fucking your own legacy, you know? Like,
Yeah.
some people just need to know when to stop.
I get it, like, okay, so I could understand, 'cause if somebody was like, "Hey, Ryan and Jeremy, we'll pay you $30,000 to come here and talk." I doubt that'll happen, but you know, never fucking know.
I'm right here.
I would go do it no matter what it was. Like, I wouldn't care if you were like, "Yeah, you're going to cover a Miley Cyrus event or something." Like, I would do it. So I get why they do it, but yeah, when you have a legacy of music, that's a different thing because you're,
Yeah, we
like you
don't have a
said,
legacy to defend yet.
exactly.
There's
Like
no
we don't,
shame in
yeah.
our game,
They're
dude.
just like, oh,
We're still
you're
building your
two dudes
legacy.
from a record store, like, you know, whatever. But I just wouldn't want to shit on my whole career like that, like especially in Vince Neil's case, because it's just literally embarrassing. Like, there's guys that go out there and do it well still. Like, people's Rolling Stones still sell out. I'm not saying they're doing it the best, but at their age, they're doing it.
But it's not embarrassing.
Yeah, like the Vince Neil thing, that was, and Axl Rose had it happen too. Like, they had, it
Terrible.
was a couple years there where those clips were like circulating the internet that were just awful. And
I mean,
like,
to
I would try to, if it were me, I'd be like, somebody take that shit down. Like, find your agent and get it to take it off, because it was embarrassing.
I don't know if, as an artist, you ever know when you're done and you should give up. Like, I think that would take a lot of self-awareness, maybe more than most people have, including myself. I don't know if I should be still going or if I should be quit. You know what I mean? It's like, I think I still have something to offer, but
In our opinion, you should keep going.
thank you.
For now.
One of the things, like, yeah, for now, let me know when it becomes fucking embarrassing. But, when we were in the van, you know, we in the van we have some of the best conversations because, of course, like Chris and Robbie and I are just enormous music nerds, like lifetime musicians. We've all been playing since we were little kids. We've all had bands since we were in our teens. So when the three of us get together, you know, we just riff on like the weirdest shit. And one of the topics that came up was like bands that tour as like the band has broken up into two bands. But now you go see it and it's like Vince Neil's Motley Crue. And then
Oh,
it's like the
yeah.
real Motley Crue and that kind of shit.
I
That
wondered
shit
about that
fucking.
with the LA Guns show, because that happened at one time where there was like Tracy was going off and then the rest of the band was going off, and it was like they were both LA Guns.
Yeah, that happened with like Jack Starr's Burning Star, and like I think either Great White or White Snake had that happen, and like a lot of those 80s bands had that shit happen.
Crazy.
And it's just fucking weird. Actually, so I was at Beyond the Gates last week and in Norway, and I saw Venom and it
Nice.
ripped. But I want to say that they were not Venom. They're like
Yeah, they're like too old.
the real Venom or Venom something. Like, I feel like they have
Wasn't
a
it
tagged on word.
Venom Inc.? Wasn't that a thing for a minute or something like that?
Yeah, because I think they've had some like lineup disputes.
Yeah.
But it was fucking great. But I think they might be doing the yeah. Then there's a lot of those, like, I just feel like there's certain genres that don't really stand the test of time. And I think like
Or certain
80s era.
albums too, for sure, that might have been great at the time that you listen to now and you're like, this is
It's
tacky.
like, but like 80s hair metal, cocaine and hairspray, and like skinny dudes in women's clothes hanging out in Hollywood with bandanas around their feet and stuff. Like that had a time, but like you can't do that forever.
Yeah.
So I feel like you just let
Unless you're
that.
Steel Panther and you're making a
You
parody
know
of
what I
it.
mean? Like
Yeah.
you can't really do that in your 60s. Like, okay, the Stones can still be the Stones, but like when I see like pop punk bands, like Newfound Glory or something, doing like they're 45
And they're doing
and
like high school songs.
they're doing high school
Yeah,
songs
it's fucked up.
with like a whiny little voice. I'm just like, I don't know, man. I feel like now that you're in your 40s, like maybe you should
Write
evolve the
something
music
else. Yeah,
that's
no,
more like
I'm with
age
you.
appropriate, you know, and like leave the pop punk for like kids. You sing about high school and having a crush on someone for the first time and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's weird.
No, man,
You know what I mean?
I totally
double the
agree.
age of their dad.
I get in I've had this conversation with another friend where I was like complaining about some band about having a whiny voice, and he's like, dude, I think you just don't like pop punk. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I do, man. You know,
You
like
don't, because we've gone
there's
over
only
this a
like
handful of
a
times.
few bands, but it's like, yeah,
Yeah.
like you said, it's like there's something about they don't evolve out of like that. Like that's perfect, like the crush thing. Like
Yeah.
we have kids, we've been through divorces, we've lived life, dude. We're kind of past the fucking skipping school and like,
Yeah.
smoking a joint in the back and getting a crush on a girlfriend and getting beat up by the football player, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like,
Anyway.
I think even Blink is still kind of like that in a lot of ways. Like, I think
Yep.
their self-titled record, the greatest thing about it was that it kind of matured them.
Right?
But like, to have them still like going around playing songs about like, I don't know, pissing their pants or whatever the fuck. It's kind of weird. Like nothing against the records. I think the records hold true. You could always go back and listen to those records, but like seeing a bunch of dudes that are like pushing 60 doing some of those songs, it just gets kind of weird.
Yeah.
Whereas
Well,
like,
now when they're singing What's My Age Again, it's because they forgot.
Yeah, right?
it's like fucking dementia. But, oh, sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
My bad.
No, it's fine. Oh, I was gonna say, I do think there's other genres that like you can kind of do forever. Like you can't age out of doom,
No,
right?
can't age
Because I
out of the
mean,
blues. Lyrically, it's
yeah, you
not.
can't age out of the blues.
There's no age to it lyrically. Like, you're not dating yourself in a certain period. Or, I
Yeah.
mean, not period, age group.
So like seeing Venom. And they're like 65. It was fucking great. It was like seeing Motorhead. It was like
That's dope.
the older Motorhead got, there's just like the fucking better it was. It was just fucking great. They were Motorhead and they were never gonna die, you know?
Yeah, that's a band
I'm
that
glad you said
I,
that and didn't say the other, because I'm like.
So many people for Motorhead, they're like cut off as Ace of Spades, and they're like, they didn't do anything after that. And I'm
What the
like,
fuck
dude,
is wrong with you?
some of their best albums were after that.
I mean, to me, Motorhead's like AC/DC. It's like if you like one record, then
You
you
probably
like
like
all
the
the
rest of
records.
them, yeah.
It's like Hatebreed. If
Agreed.
you like one, yeah, they just do the same thing very well forever. So
Yeah,
you can't really fuck
they
that
found
up.
their niche and stuck with it. Bolt Thrower did it until the end of their fucking run there, so, and they did it well.
Yeah.
Hey, what did you think of?
Also,
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
no, I was just gonna say also, a tough, like playing Bolt Thrower as you age can't be easy, right? That's like very intense music to keep going.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and
Yeah.
dexterity and
I don't
stuff.
know, man. I seen Cannibal Corpse not that long ago, and I watched Corpse Grinder like windmill headbang for 2 minutes straight. And I was just like, how did he not fall over? Like, it's nuts. Like, and he's in his 50s. Like, not that
Yeah.
that's like ancient or anything, but it's not like he's a young man anymore.
Well,
Oh, yeah.
I get how, I mean, well, obviously you play guitar, so Keith Richards just does like all his open tunings to make it easy. But
Yeah.
it's like, But yeah, like trying to play like some shredding fucking technical metal at like 70 with arthritis, yeah, while you're like,
ah, your dexterity is all fucked,
yeah,
up.
Maybe, yeah, maybe it's time to play the blues.
And especially the vocal, man, like bolt thrower vocal, you know, that, oh, that's, yeah, not, it's easy gotta, to like, do.
Just fucking destroy your, yeah, shit.
Yeah.
Some of those guys long term, I think if they like, if they had the right training, the longevity can be there if they don't destroy their voice. But a lot of them, so many of them, like Chris Barnes is a good example. Like his latest, yeah, stuff is kind of rough. Cause I mean, yeah, he's probably tore the shit out of his voice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like some, and that's what, to me, like we talked about Vince Neil and some of those guys like that, trying to hit that range forever and trying to hit that range when you're older and, you know, your health is declining and shit. That's super hard. Like Axl Rose range, yeah, super hard range to,
especially,
hit,
if you're already out of breath when you're going into that, you're trying to you're trying to reach that octave, but, yeah, you're like down, yeah, here.
But I will say, yeah, man, think about it on a mental, on your mental state, like you're saying, from the singer's point of view. Let's say they were a basketball player, let's say they, whatever they were good at, and then they age, yeah, and then they got to let go of that. That's got to be fucking hard, man, because that, you,
especially,
know, it's
when
like
you're
their
super
identity
famous
and you're super, yeah, right. Yeah, it's got to be difficult.
I know. It must be so fucking depressing, honestly.
Yeah, because, I mean, it would be within you to keep creating. And yeah, I always understand that, like, about, you know, people that are in their 70s, 80s, whatever. Like, they're going to still create until they're done. But it's just not all of,
here's
it works.
Here's a good example that it worked. Johnny Cash, whole life. Country, it, you works, can grow, and you can be 20 and you can be 80 and, yeah, it works.
Buddy Guy would be another one.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers,
well,
like
the blues,
motherfuckers,
you know,
like 90,
yeah,
and he's still doing it.
You know what, yeah, I think is actually an interesting one is, I think Depeche Mode has aged very well.
Their, oh, latest, I would agree. Their latest album was really good. Tears for, and, Fears is another one.
They can do all their vocals live. You know, their vocals are fucking great live. They can still, you know.
But they're well-trained musicians. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm, that isn't always the case. Like, in Venom's case, I'm sure. Like, you know, they've been doing it forever. But were they, like, yeah, studio musicians, like how Tears for Fears and et cetera were? I don't, yeah, really think so. They were just kind of, yeah, doing what they were doing, jamming. And then, yeah, it worked at the time, and then they made their legacy.
For sure.
Black metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the genre, like the style of music, really can be a make or break, you, yeah, know?
Absolutely. Yeah. So before we wrap this up, because I could sit and talk about this shit all day.
Same with me. Yeah. I feel like you guys are going to stop talking and get the fuck out.
We'll go on tangents. Like,
oh,
this,
man. I just need bathroom breaks.
Do.
I'll be good.
Hey, do you guys, before, I know you're going to queue up something here, but do you guys did you say you have a record store?
Yeah. We're in the back of it right now.
Oh, fuck yeah. Okay. Can I send you guys some records?
Yeah.
You most definitely can, sir.
I'll message you on, yeah, Instagram afterwards.
Hell yeah. Are you guys on Discogs?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'll find you on there so I could shop your store. Okay. Because we have
if you shop, yeah, the podcast name is our Discogs store, yeah, which is mostly just new things right now because I don't have all the used stuff in the store up here.
Okay. Right on. Yeah, because we have an LP, the self-titled LP on Coke Bottle Clear.
Okay.
And I have some copies of that I could send up to you guys, like for you and maybe to put in the store or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
We also have, I sold all the Lost Days. We did a short run of Lost Days on
I seen a
Clear.
7-inch, wasn't it? Was, yeah, that the 7-inch?
Yeah, it was, yeah, a Clear with Pink Label. We sold all those, but we're doing Dead Romance. I just ordered a Dead Romance with Protect Me From What I Want on the back.
Oh, dope.
And we should be getting those in a few weeks. So when I get those, I'd love to send some up to you guys as well.
Definitely. Yeah, I'll get, awesome, you our mailing address and everything. I'll message you afterwards.
Much appreciated, sir.
I, yeah, did. Before we ask junkie. The... oh, yeah, we are too.
Yeah.
Before I ask the end of the episode question that we always ask, is there anything you would like to add, get off your chest, plug, promote, anything like that? I'll have all your info in the episode description. So,
cool. Yeah. Yeah. Dead Romance is out now. That's the latest single. For Some Days Are Darker. Also the videos on YouTube as well for Dead Romance. We've got a new song called Oblivion coming out this fall, September-ish. Okay. And then as soon as we figure out what the name of this EP will be, we'll have the EP coming out with that as well. So look for more updates coming soon. But I think I'm going to open up a pre-order for the Dead Romance 7-inch at somedaysofdarker.com. So cool. Check that out too. And all that stuff will be in our store at somedaysofdarker.com.
I'll put a link for that in the episode description. So anybody listening, interested, go click that. And
awesome.
I'll throw you guys' Instagram in there. So follow them, follow us if you're not.
And of course, the backyard barbecue, the blackout barbecue on Friday.
Yeah, the acoustic.
Friday in Detroit.
And then Christmas coming up too as well. Because yes. I know we're going to be talking to Ramona about that, promoting that. So we'll be sure to plug you guys again on
that. If you're in the Detroit area this Friday, man, for sure. Catch out the acoustic set.
Yeah.
But
with Fear.
Yeah, with Fear. That's going to be so cool. And Guida. Yeah. I want to go, but I don't know that I'm going to be able to make it. So we always ask people at the end of our episodes, just because Jeremy and I are into all sorts of different music, outside of your genre of music that you play, what is something that you listen to that people wouldn't expect?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you asked this question. My most prized bin of records is my soundtracks bin.
Fuck yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, like I'm very proud of my soundtrack vinyl collection. Actually, I kept my bin next to me for this interview just in case that
you
ended up.
Let's see what you got, dude.
What's a couple of your favorite soundtracks?
I've got some great titles, and I think like they, you know, because I love film, and having great film soundtracks is almost like a list of my favorite movies and my favorite soundtracks at the same time.
Yeah.
You guys know the film Angel Heart?
Yep.
1987?
Yeah.
I have an OG vinyl of that. The Crash from 96.
I remember that movie. Yeah.
The Cronenberg film?
Yep.
Yeah. I recently got that reissue of Crash, which is
now
fucking
great.
Now,
the Angel Heart one, is that is that all the, is that the score of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sick. All right, cool.
Yeah, it's the score, so it has like a lot of those blues tunes that you hear in the bar. It has the Johnny Favorite
and
song.
That like New Orleans fucking grime to it.
All that stuff. And then it has like all between all the songs and weaving through everything, it has like dialogue and then like some of the actual like score underneath that. So it's like a combo of dialogue, score and what's the word I'm looking for? Where it's like your soundtrack, I guess.
Yeah,
like soundtracks
music
are usually like
the
band songs
the
and the score. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Music and
stuff. It's kind of like Apocalypse Now soundtracks, kind of like that with the dialogue.
With the little skits and then the fucking 12 Jimi Hendrix songs or whatever.
Doors.
Or Doors, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's up there. Only Lovers Left Alive soundtrack. It's epic.
That one.
Yeah. That's a Jim Jarmusch film it's a vampire film set in Detroit.
Oh, shit. Now I got to watch it. What was
it's
the name
with,
of it?
Only Tom Lovers Hiddleston Left Alive. And Only Lovers Left Alive, yeah.
Okay. I wrote it down.
That's a great one. It's got two sides. It has like the U.S. side. It has like Detroit and Tangier. So it's a double LP, and the first half is like a bunch of squirrel songs and stuff like that.
Not
and
really.
Then the second half is like Tangier side. It's all like, you know, world music, and it gets like out there. Yeah, that one's super great.
I'll definitely check that out.
Cut me off at any time. The Twin Peaks, The Return soundtrack.
Oh, I have the original, but not the Return.
Yeah,
I love that show, dude.
The Return's epic. It's like a comp. You know how they had all the bands, like each episode they'd have a band close out the show. So it has like Nine Inch Nails. It has like an Eddie Vedder tune. It has a great Chromatics tune, and then of course like all the, you know, a bunch of the other cool stuff that Lynch curated for
Yeah,
it. Yeah.
that's sick.
Super cool. And then a lot of horror soundtracks, like It Follows. I have a
That's so scared, dude. That
We
shit
were
is
just talking
so
about that
creepy,
the other
dude.
day, weren't
I
we?
feel, yeah, I feel like that record mentally affects me, dude, when I listen to it.
I
Like, it's so
sometimes
fucked
can't get
up.
through it.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
fucked up, dude.
It's really
I'm
fucked
glad I'm
up.
not the only one, dude, that thinks I'm just, it's just so fucking gnarly.
I was in Joshua Tree and I found a like old 70s copy of Psycho.
Oh, that's
Damn.
fucking cool.
Yeah, that was a really good one. And then there's one other nerdy one I'll show you guys. If I could find it, it should be in here. Oh, it's in my other bin. Sorry, of recent. I keep like, you know, the shit I'm listening to the most
Yeah,
out there. But
for sure.
yeah, I got an old pressing, like a first pressing of a Possession soundtrack,
Oh, okay.
the horror
Nice.
flick
Yeah.
Possession.
That shit's so fucking hard to come by, dude. Where'd you find
Yeah,
that at?
so
Just out in
those.
the wild or?
A lot of that rare stuff I have to
Do
Discogs.
you?
Like
Yeah.
it's mostly only in Europe.
Oh, shit. We
Yeah.
have quite a few soundtracks here, but they're more like just oddity randoms, like Breakfast at Tiffany's and like stuff like that. Like, we don't get many horror soundtracks in. I mean, I'll order them new, like from Waxworks and stuff, but
Yeah.
as far as used, we are not in the area that they were in abundance.
Yeah, people are
I've
getting rid of
snatched
them,
up a
man.
few, but like
Yeah.
Escape from New York,
Yeah.
shit like that.
I've seen Apocalypse Now come through here a
But my
handful of
prized
times,
ones
that
would be
sort of
like
stuff.
Terminator's original,
Ooh.
RoboCop original,
Ooh.
Beetlejuice original. Those would be
Damn.
like my probably my top like three
My favorite soundtrack pretty
soundtracks. Like
much
as far as
ever
like
is
vinyl
Superfly.
rarity, you know. But like my
Right.
favorite, I mean that's kind of hard.
It is hard. But I'm just going off of my most listened to soundtrack ever, and it's got to be Superfly. I'm pretty sure I've never listened to a soundtrack more than that album.
Cross
Amazing.
110th Street, dude.
That's another good one, too.
Yeah, so we're gonna go on forever, bro.
Yeah. But anyways,
Yeah.
man, before we get sidetracked again, movies are like our
Sure.
movies and music are hand in hand for us.
Yeah,
But
just
we thank you for your time and for getting on to talk with us, chatting, and it's been cool. It was fucking
yeah, guys.
surprising that you've been up here to play in Alpena. That was awesome. That's why we love
Yeah.
doing this, 'cause we're like, well, we don't know what to expect. We'll get to know the dude, and then you're like, oh, I've been here and played with this band, that
Yeah, and
band,
I have like your albums in my collection and shit. Like, it's fucking
and
wacky, dude.
yeah, when Ramona introduced me to you guys, I just thought, man, like, I feel like I already know these guys. We're gonna talk for hours.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again, man. We could just
Yeah,
do
and
a
I'd
whole
love to come up
nother
and see your shop.
separate fucking
Yeah,
episode.
absolutely. If you
Sure.
ever coming up to Alpena, just get a hold of one of us ahead of time, and we'll definitely be around. And then if we make it down to Blackout Barbecue or Black Christmas, I'll get a hold
Yeah.
of you in advance,
Yeah, for
just
sure.
so we can meet up and say what's up.
Yeah, man. Great talking with you guys.
Yeah,
You
you
too,
too,
dude.
man. You take care,
Thanks
and
for having me.
I'll be in touch with you.
All right. Be
Have a good one,
well.
man.